Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 29th, 2022, weekend edition. Midlander involved in Capitol riot says he regrets his actions. By Stuart Doreen. The Reporter Telegram recently sat down with Eliel Rosa, one of two Midlanders involved in the January 6 riot at the U.S. Capitol. Rosa talked about life since that day, how he approached law enforcement immediately after returning to Midland following the events, lessons learned that day, and why it was important to come forward and communicate with the Reporter Telegram readers. In October, Rosa was sentenced to 1 year of probation, $500 fine, and 100 hours of community service after pleading guilty to demonstrating inside the Capitol building. The judge at the trial considered the remorse Rosa expressed and that Rosa turned himself into the FBI when deciding his sentence. He also stated he believed Rosa's conduct was a strange aberration in an otherwise lawful life. Included in the presentation is a question and answer with Rosa and the letter that he read to the judge. It included the following: I'm thankful for everything that I went through in this indeed painful yet intensely pedagogical 279-day process. I am especially grateful for the way my family, my friends, and my community forgave and embraced me. Reporter Telegram. Why are you coming forward to communicate with the community? Rosa. This community gave me so much more than I ever deserved. My embarrassing attitude was a bite on many of the hands that fed me. My decision to come forward is to offer my sincere public apology for my impulsive, irrational behavior. I egregiously misbehaved in a home where I'm still a guest. Although the judge referred to my action as a strange aberration in an otherwise lawful life, I have hurt my family, my friends, my community, and especially the law-abiding immigrants who came before me. And for that, I am deeply sorry. What has been the response of Midlanders you have talked with since that day? Rosa, I was embraced and have received full support from all the people who knew me. As per those who didn't know me, yet recognized me around, not a single one of them demonstrated any anger or disdain whatsoever toward me or my family, especially my youngest son in school. For that, I am eternally grateful. Had it been hard to stay relatively silent up to this point? Being silent has always been counterintuitive to me. Throughout my entire adult life, I've been absolutely outspoken and active toward countless political issues in the country I came from, in other nations of the world, and finally here in the U.S. Therefore, it has been a daily exercise on humility and discretion. I can truly say that it has been a year of tremendous learning processes and growth opportunities. I can confirm the veracity of King Solomon's wise words that it is much easier to learn and mature in affliction, loss, and pain. How do you remain active in Midland? After the decision to shut down my social media activism and later the School of Government, I fully focused on restoring the shaken bonds with my wife and two sons. I sought therapeutic help, and thank God I can say that all is well now. In August last year, following a long period looking for a job, I was invited by Jeff Russell, a local businessman, to work for him at Paul Evans Design Gallery. Jeff's amazing generosity gave me much more than just the chance to have a steady income once again. I have been able to connect with my community once again. I'll never be able to appropriately express my gratitude for all the confidence he deposited in me. You've talked about the need to be corrected. What did you mean by that? Many Americans don't know it, but our founding fathers disagreed on several different political topics. However, based on the biblical principle stated in Jeremiah 17:9, they unanimously agreed that human passions, located in what they call the lower portions of human nature, should be disciplined by the laws in place every time a lack of self-governance would cause one to go astray from agreed upon societal principles. That was the message I wanted to convey to the judge in my court statement, and he even mentioned it explicitly in his sentencing. Now, even more important than that, as a convict follower of Christ, I have learned the hard way that when one is not willing to acknowledge an error and be corrected, that arrogance will become the precursor of their fall. I experienced that several times in my life and absolutely did not want to fall prey to that dangerous trap again. I deserve no credit for that decision, though. I could never have produced it by myself. All credit goes to my merciful Savior. Can you talk about your work with the Nehemiah School of Government? I've been an avid student of America's founding documents, principles, and history for over two decades. I came to America for a PhD in constitutional law, something that has sadly not materialized yet. The Nehemiah School of Government, officially launched in January 2018, aims at helping rebuild the Judeo-Christian foundations and legacies of America, as well as inspiring native citizens and immigrants to become agents of change responsible for the spiritual and social health, first of their local community and then the nation, grounded upon those infallible principles. Our in-person classes will be resumed soon. For the time being, I received an amazing invitation from Mark Christian to be one of his weekly guests on KWEL Radio's Patriots Call every Thursday, 1 to 2 p.m. on AM 1070. We've been talking about the realities of America's immigration issues. The school also promotes three times a year, July 4th, September 17th, and November 11th, the public reading of the Declaration of Independence, Constitution, and Mayflower Compact, respectively. What else would you like to add that wasn't addressed? I want to express my deepest gratitude to MRT for this opportunity. It has been the only local media outlet that reached out to me and gave me the opportunity to show the community that I am not a terrorist or an insurrectionist. I never loved my native country as much as I love America. Here I found both my identity and my destiny. I am aware that there are many other immigrants, much more professionally, academically, and spiritually prepared than me, to carry out the task of restoring this great nation. Yet, just like them, I pledge my life, fortune, and sacred honor to see what happens. If America falls, the world falls. As long as America stands like a shining city on a hill, the world will have a pathway toward stability and prosperity. The following is the letter that Midland's Elio Rosa says he read to the judge at his trial following the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol. He provided the letter to the Reporter-Telegram for publication. Your Honor, thank you for the opportunity to speak. These sincere words come from the bottom of my heart. I'm thankful for everything that I went through in this indeed painful yet intensely pedagogical 279-day process. I'm especially grateful for the way my family, my friends, and my community forgave and embraced me. I believe I am right now in a much better position toward the pursuit of my so much dreamed of American citizenship, something I always considered a privilege to be earned, not a right to be entitled to. Above all, I stand here today, Your Honor, grounded on James Madison's "If Men Were Angels" principle that led me to deep meditations throughout these 9 long months. As I am not an angel, this whole legal process was made necessary to point out the passions that I should have self-governed on January 6th, but did not. As possibly the only one non-citizen charged for that day's events, I feel that I hurt everything I believe America stands for. At the same time, however, exactly because I am not an angel, I am so blessed that my Creator gave me the ability to repent from my wrongdoings, which, in my Christian faith, goes way beyond just feeling remorseful. It means the change of heart and the change of ways. So I humbly acknowledge and accept your final decision, and I hope this great nation of laws, not the whims of men like my native country, can give me a second chance to continue to make things right. Thank you. On fire prices at highest since 2015 by Mella McEwen. Commodity prices had a very strong start to the new year, fueled by a combination of robust demand, constrained supplies, and heightened geopolitical risks amid the tension between the West and Russia over Ukraine. West Texas Intermediate on the Mercantile Exchange are at seven-year highs and climbed above $87 a barrel as prices rose three or five out of five trading days. Prices gained 2% for the week. Prices rose 21 cents Friday to end the week and the first month of 2022 at $86.82, up from Monday's close. Natural gas prices experienced a wild week, spiking as much as 72% to above $7 on the New York NEX Thursday as the February contract expired. The March contract opened trading with a 35-cent jump fueled by the winter storm approaching the Northeast. Such strong commodity prices may prompt producers to increase drilling activity and boost output, but many remain cautious and committed to returning cash to shareholders. Herb Vogel, President and Chief Executive Officer of SSM Energy, said, "We have a very high-quality asset base, so we generally do not adjust our multi-year operating plans to changes in oil and natural gas prices. That being said, the macroeconomic outlook for oil is very strong right now, and we welcome more stability in the energy sector." Edward Moya, Senior Market Analyst of the Americas at Oanda, commented, "Crude prices have been on fire, rising for a sixth straight week as the demand outlook improves and over geopolitical fears that could lead to severe production disruptions. The supply side continues to support a tight market as OPEC Plus is expected to stick to the plan of increasing output by 400,000 barrels in March, even though its compliance last month only hit 60% of the plan. Now that $90 oil is here, it won't take much to get prices to 100, and that will just justify the global energy crisis. News of an Omicron variant have not rattled markets, as boosters appear to still be getting the job done." Looking at natural gas prices, Moya told the Reporter Telegram by email, "U.S. natural gas prices skyrocketed on Thursday in an unexpected short squeeze and then continued to grind higher on Friday as expectations for elevated demand as the Northeast faces a blockbuster storm. Natural gas prices abroad have been surging as tensions intensify between Russia, Ukraine, and the West. The favorite trade on Wall Street has been trading oil and gas as tight supplies will remain and as multiple catalysts emerge from potential supply disruptions. Like Moya, there are others predicting a return to $100 oil. Chevron, speaking on Bloomberg's TV, said $100 oil is certainly within the realm of what we would see in the next few months. BPW recognizes Carmen Bryant at Celebration Dinner. Carmen Bryant earned the honor of being named the 2021 Woman of Achievement by the Uptown Midland Business and Professional Women, BPW. Bryant accepted the award at the National Business Women's Week dinner that took place at the Petroleum Club. Krista Escamilla welcomed everyone that came to celebrate Bryant's achievement. After Evie Gandy said the prayer, guests dined on an appetizer. Misty Stewart highlighted the mission of PBW, and a proclamation by Lori Blong was announced. Former Women of Achievement honorees Becky McCraney and Kathy Harrison, then introduced Bryant. Bryant showing her humbleness that attendees all over the room had been describing her as all night, thanked BPW. She thanked her husband Billy, her friends, and other family for the support they gave her. To wrap up the night, the BPW Woman of the Year, which is awarded to a member within the BPW organization for her outstanding efforts, was awarded to Leslie Donnell. Conference Helps Boost Permian Basin Energy Workforce by Michelle Harmon, Executive Board Member of the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference. The Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference is almost here. After more than a year of planning and preparing, the fourth edition of the PB Week will spring to life February 23rd and 24th at the Horseshoe Complex. I'm looking forward to this important event as a faculty member of the University of Texas Permian Basin, a board member, and an original volunteer. The central focus of the conference is water and its use throughout the oil and gas production process. That topic alone is paramount right now in the energy industry. Yet, the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference is even bigger than that focus, as it also helps bolster our future energy workforce by providing opportunity to UT Permian Basin students. The program at the University of Texas Permian Basin, it was founded in 2007 with the help of several UT Permian Basin deans and faculty members, past and present, and Jim Woodcock, the CEO of Midland Portfolio Partners and JJW Oil and Gas. The conference idea sprung from Jim's long-standing experience in the energy industry and staunch commitment to future sustainability. He continues to serve as the executive board president. The conference would not be here today without his leadership and dedication. The conference is housed at UTPB's Shepherd Leadership Institute with Kate Williamson, the executive director of the Shepherd Leadership Institute, and Shelby Landgraf, the director of the community engagement, pouring their talents and time into the event as well. There is no better way to learn from energy experts, contribute to the education of our workforce, and support our Permian Basin economy than for you to participate in this event. All proceeds raised from the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference return to UT Permian Basin. Thus, you're purchasing a registration, you're broadening your industry's knowledge, and supporting the future of our region and its workforce in both direct and indirect ways. I often write about the shortage of workers across the Permian Basin and country. The Great Resignation is happening, and we need to backfill the vacant positions of both degreed and non-degreed positions. UT Permian Basin students will be volunteering at the conference and are excited to network with attendees. What an excellent way for industry professionals to meet potential future employees. In addition, students have the opportunity to present their own research in the field of energy and water through the annual student poster competition. Elevation Resources and its CEO Steve Pruitt are generously sponsoring this portion of the conference. Scholarship prizes totaling $6,000 will be awarded to six students across two categories, undergraduates and graduate students. For more information or to enter the student poster competition, please email jbs@utpb.edu. As for your professional development or that of your business, the conference offers the chance to learn new practices and stay on top of cutting-edge technology, supporting the oil and gas industry, particularly for those interested in upskilling themselves and critical staff. Attracting and hiring outside talent takes time and money. Help retain your best staff by supporting them with professional development. The conference offers continuing education credits for professional engineers and landmen. The conference kicks off with a welcome reception on the evening of February 22nd at the Petroleum Museum. Then the conference runs for two full days, February 23rd and 24th, at the Horseshoe, with more than a dozen conference sessions. The presentations and panel discussions will cover a variety of related subjects, including alternative uses for produced water, the impact of ESG on business and investment strategies, and gaining a better understanding of earthquakes in the Permian Basin. All told, we've packed in close to 24 dynamic speakers from across Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Washington, D.C. into the conference lineup. Finally, the conference offers many personal networking opportunities. There will be ample time between sessions to meet new and old friends. It's been a long 2 years since our 2020 conference, but the 2022 Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference is promising to be the best one yet. For more information and to purchase your registration, visit waterandenergy.com. I hope to see you at the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference in February. On-fire prices at highest since 2015 by Mella McEwen. Commodity prices had a very strong start to the new year, fueled by a combination of robust demand, constrained supplies, and heightened geopolitical risks amid the tension between the West and Russia over Ukraine. West Texas Intermediate on the Mercantile Exchange are at 7-year highs and climbed above $87 a barrel as prices rose 3 or 5 out of 5 trading days. Prices gained 2% for the week. Prices rose 21 cents Friday to end the week and the first month of 2022 at $86.82, up from Monday's close. Natural gas prices experienced a wild week, spiking as much as 72% to above $7 on the New York NEX Thursday as the February contract expired. The March contract opened trading with a 35-cent jump fueled by the winter storm approaching the Northeast. Such strong commodity prices may prompt producers to increase drilling activity and boost output, but many remain cautious and committed to returning cash to shareholders. Herb Vogel, President and Chief Executive Officer of SSM Energy, said, "We have a very high-quality asset base, so we generally do not adjust our multi-year operating plans to changes in oil and natural gas prices. That being said, the macroeconomic outlook for oil is very strong right now, and we welcome more stability in the energy sector." Edward Moya, senior market analyst for the Americas at Oanda, commented, "Crude prices have been on fire, rising for a 6th straight week as the demand outlook improves and over geopolitical fears that could lead to severe production disruptions. The supply side continues to support a tight market as OPEC Plus is expected to stick to the plan of increasing output by 400,000 barrels in March, even though its compliance last month only hit 60% of the plan. Now that $90 oil is here, it won't take much to get prices to 100, and that will just justify the global energy crisis. News of an Omicron variant have not rattled markets, as boosters appear to still be getting the job done." Looking at natural gas prices, Moya told the Reporter Telegram by email, "U.S. natural gas prices skyrocketed on Thursday in an unexpected short squeeze and then continued to grind higher on Friday as expectations for elevated demand as the Northeast faces a blockbuster storm. Natural gas prices abroad have been surging as tensions intensify between Russia, Ukraine, and the West. The favorite trade on Wall Street has been trading oil and gas as tight supplies will remain and as multiple catalysts emerge from potential supply disruptions. Like Moya, there are others predicting a return to $100 oil. Chevron, speaking on Bloomberg's TV, said $100 oil is certainly within the realm of what we would see in the next few months. Pep rally celebrates San Jacinto's 70th birthday. Photo and text by Julie Donnelly. San Jacinto Junior High School celebrated its 70th birthday recently with a special pep rally. All current Mustang students and faculty, along with former students, teachers, principals, and employees, gathered on the football field on the 70th birthday of school to mark the special occasion. Attendees arrived to both the San Jacinto and Midland High School drum lines playing. Jessica Gore, SJ's principal, welcomed everyone. The event officially kicked off with a presentation of colors by the Midland High School ROTC, which was followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. All faculty members and alumni, along with current teachers and staff, were then recognized by Gore. It was then noted that former President George Bush and his wife Laura, both former SJ students themselves, sent well wishes to the school. All current students involved in volleyball, basketball, track, field, tennis, football, orchestra, and choir were recognized during the event. Current cheerleaders and pep squad were also performed. Sewell Leadership Event set to feature NFL star by J.C. Lewis. The annual Sewell Leadership Event has announced the speaker lineup for the 2022 event. Speakers include John Maxwell, Andy Stanley, and Tim Tebow for the event set for March 29th from 9 to 4:15 in the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tebow is a two-time national champion, Heisman Trophy winner, first-round NFL draft pick, and a former professional baseball player. The four-time New York Times best-selling author, speaker, and football analyst is also passionate about the Tim Tebow Foundation, which has a mission to bring faith, hope, and love to those needing a brighter day in their darkest hour of need. The organization is currently fighting for people who cannot fight for themselves in more than 70 countries and counting through four primary ministry focuses with 16 initiatives. Maxwell is a number one New York Times best-selling author, speaker, coach, and leader who has sold more than 33 million books in 50 languages. He has been called the number one leader in business and the most influential leadership expert in the world. His organization includes the John Maxwell Company, the John Maxwell Team, Equip, and the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation. He is a recipient of the Horatio Alger Award and the Mother Teresa Prize for Global Peace and Leadership from the Luminary Leadership Network. Stanley is a communicator, author, and pastor who founded North Point Ministries in 1995 in Atlanta. Today, NPM is 8 churches in the Atlanta area with a network of 130 churches around the globe. A survey of U.S. pastors in Outreach magazine identified Stanley as one of the 10 most influential living pastors. More than 10.5 million of his messages, leadership views, YouTube videos, and podcasts are accessed monthly. The Sewell Leadership Event brings together more than 1,800 top business owners, professional students, and others, individuals from across the Permian Basin. It's hosted by the Sewell family of companies. It is tailored each year to address the current climate of West Texas. Attendees have the opportunity to hear from top-class speakers while making a difference in the community. The Sewell family underwrites the expenses for the event, so ticket revenue can be donated to those in need. Tickets are $54 to $104 and can be purchased at event.etix.com. Arthur Mayhew passed away on January 20th. A celebration of life will be scheduled by the family at a later date. Please check back at the Fitzgerald Summer Funeral Home website for updated arrangements. Carol Lee Van Cleve Sr. passed away on January 21st. There will be a private family service and public celebration of life service on March 18th at the American Legion Earl S. Bailey Post at 3 p.m. All friends and family are welcome to attend. Services are entrusted to the Acres West Funeral Chapel. Orlando Asiaga passed away on January 26th. Rosary was held Friday, January 28th at the branch of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be on Saturday, January 29th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Robert Dean Conrad Jr. passed away on January 22nd. The date of celebration of life will be announced at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Thomas Jean Lamb passed away on December 21st. There will be a visitation celebration of life held on Wednesday, February 9th at the VFW post in Midland. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, February 12th in Pana, Illinois at the First Church of the Nazarene at 11 a.m., followed by lunch in the fellowship hall. Delma Carrasco passed away on January 27th. Visitation will be from 1 to 9 p.m. Sunday, January 30th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Rosary will be Monday at 7 at the funeral home, and the funeral service will be at 9 a.m. Tuesday, February 1st at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church. Patricia Gail Williams passed away on January 23rd. Funeral services will be held at a later date. Arrangements are made with Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Raymond Ramos passed away on January 23rd. Visitation will be held on Monday, January 31st from 9 to 8 p.m. with a rosary at 7 at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be on Tuesday, February 1st at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Willie Taylor of Midland passed away on January 27th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, February 3rd at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at 12 p.m. Friday, February 4th at the funeral home, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
This is Jane reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, January 29th. COVID, staffing backing up courts. There are roughly 6,000 pending cases in Ector County District Court right now, roughly double what there used to be. And COVID-19 and staffing shortages are to blame, said Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan. Gallivan took over the reins of the District Attorney's Office from Bobby Bland in January 2021, nearly a year into the pandemic, and at a time when judges were unable to hold live in-person court hearings. At that time, the office had about 3,000 more cases than normal, he said. The courts returned to normal practices in May of 21, but things haven't gotten much better, he said. He is supposed to have 22 prosecutors, but only has 16 currently. The office has a rolling average of about 6,000 cases, and that includes roughly 60 homicide, intoxication, manslaughter, and criminally negligent homicide cases that are filed annually, Gallivan said. Unfortunately, even though we've resolved some of the cases either through plea or trial, the number stays the same because we've had that number of new cases, he said. People didn't stop breaking the law during COVID. Not only did COVID-19 slow the judicial process down, but having 6 open prosecutor positions and too few judges hasn't helped either, Gallivan said. On top of that, he said law enforcement agencies, labs, and forensic pathologists are also shorthanded, so that slows down the process too. Just speaking hypothetically, as far as numbers go, if we receive 10,000 cases a year and our plea rate is, let's say, even 98%, that leaves 200 cases to try. Well, we only have 4 district courts and 2 county courts, Gallivan said. On a good year, we'll try to 25 cases total, so that's just over 10% of what didn't plead. This is Jane reading from the Odessa American on Saturday, January 29th. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, tests will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com, C-U-R-A-T-I-V-E.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with Docs, drive-through testing for COVID-19 will be from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Field parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 Access Road or 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. The site will have both PCR tests and rapid antigen tests available. This will be the second COVID-19 testing site set up by the city with no out-of-pocket cost. No appointments are needed, however, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of material. PCR test results are expected within 2 to 3 days in most cases, and rapid test results will be a 15 to 20 minute wait at the site, or you can receive your results via text message. To pre-register, visit docsheathtesting.com, docsheathtesting.com, or text capital D, capital O, capital C, capital S, capital T, capital X to 41411. Health insurance information will be requested if available. For more information, call the Docs Health Call Center at 267-362-5207. Community Wellness America is hosting free COVID-19 testing for ages 5 and older throughout January. The testing schedule is as follows. Fridays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Ector County Health Department at 221 North Texas Avenue. Sundays from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane. Mondays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. All participants are asked to wear a mask. Citizenship is not required. Vaccination status is not a requirement. For more information, call 432-349-0522. That is 432-349-0522. This is Jane reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, January 29th, from the obituaries and death notices. Edward Eddie Lewis Jr. In Fort Davis, Edward Eddie Lee Lewis Jr. was born in Hobbs, New Mexico on September 25th, 1953, to Edward Lee and Gladys Dickey Lewis. He went to be with his Lord on January 6th, 2022. Services were held earlier this month. Eddie grew up in Odessa, Texas, and graduated from Odessa High School in 1972. Oscar P. Diaz. In Odessa, Oscar Padilla Diaz, 79, passed away on January 20th, 2022 in Odessa. Visitation will be held from 1 to 9 p.m. on Sunday, January 30th at Martinez Funeral Home, with recitation of the rosary at 7 p.m. Masks are required to be worn upon entering the funeral home. Funeral mass will be held at 2 p.m. on Monday, January 31st, 2022 at St. Joseph's Catholic Church with Father Chavez officiating. Masks are required upon entering the church. In Odessa, Jerry Delane Cruz, 76, died on Wednesday, January 26th, in Odessa. Chapel services will be held at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, February 1st, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Interment will be Tuesday, February 1st, at 4 p.m. at Hillside Memorial Garden Cemetery in Snyder. Arrangements are made by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Patricia Espinosa Aguilar. In Odessa, Patricia E. Espinosa Aguilar, 57, died on Wednesday, January 26th, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 29th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Elder Bert Cole is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 31st. District coping with COVID absences. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. The latest COVID surge has seen Ector County ISD trying to cope with employee absences at some points that hadn't been seen since the beginning of the pandemic. Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said beginning January 3rd, ECISD has seen staff absences range anywhere from 7.5% to a high of about 12.5%. The absence reports are run every day, but are based on when an employee goes online and fills out one, so someone could miss 5 days and not fill one out until they were better. Adkins said the week of January 24th that cases had dropped dramatically since January 18th, when some 350 positive COVID cases were reported. This was after the long Martin Luther King weekend. Quote, "It went from 350 positive cases on our Tuesday report to 175 on Wednesday to 106 on Thursday to 70 on Friday," he said. On Thursday, there were 11 positive COVID cases among staff and 52 positive student reports. Under Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines, which Adkins said that Ector County Health Department is also using, absence times have been shortened to 5 days for staff members. The period is longer for students. Quote, "We have some adults quarantining because they have been exposed to somebody, and there are adults staying home with kids. All of those roll into the absence numbers," he said. He said that the absences have a larger impact on smaller campuses. Quote, "Five or six cases on an elementary campus has a much bigger impact than 15 or 20 at Odessa High School or Permian High School on managing the students and keeping the school operating," Adkins said. Ross Elementary School Principal Susan Hendricks said in a January 24th interview that one day they were down 13 staff members. Quote, "We're a smaller campus, so that hits pretty hard when that happens, so all hands on deck. Everybody's being plugged in where we can. Luckily, through opportunity culture, we have 3 REACH associates, so they have been able to help in those areas when needed. We've been hit hard, and it's been a struggle, and I know it has been everywhere," Hendricks said. She added that it has hit their attendance as well, which is why strong instruction throughout the day, every single day, is so critical. Burleson Elementary School Principal Rosa Cruz has had a similar COVID experience with staff and students out sick. Cruz said they have all had to roll up their sleeves and help in the classrooms. Even at larger campuses like Odessa High School, Principal Mauricio Marquez said COVID has had a big impact. Quote, "We're still having school. We're still having everything. We still have coaches that are having to go to their events, directors having to go to their events," Marquez said. People are also out with illnesses other than COVID. They may have doctor's appointments. With all the absences, Marquez says they don't have enough substitutes in the district to cover all the absences. Quote, "There are days that are better than others, but many times we just don't have the number of individuals to cover the amount of absences for staff members," he said. Marquez said there are teachers who volunteer to cover classes during their conference period for which they are compensated. Quote, "That's one way that we can certainly provide some support. I can tell you my team, my teachers, have been amazing in being able to do that and provide us with some support in covering some of those classes, Marquez added. When they are not able to do that, they split classes. Students go to another teacher's class in the same discipline so they don't lose instruction. Schoolology, a learning management system offered free through the Texas Education Agency, has been a help. Marquez said teachers can place their assignments in the system, and all students have access to it because they all have their own devices. But he said it's not the same as being in class with a teacher. OHS has about 220 to 225 teachers, not including personnel such as instructional aides. Quote, in the last couple of weeks, we've had 40 to 50 teachers out, Marquez said. He noted that COVID also has impacted student attendance. Quote, I'm blessed that I have an amazing team of individuals here that everybody's pitching in. They're doing the very best that they can to provide our kids with every opportunity to be successful, but ultimately it does have an impact, unfortunately, when either a teacher is out or a student is not here, Marquez said. Odessa Collegiate Academy principal James Ramage has 370 students and 17 teachers at his early college high school. Ramage was sick last week, and the principal at OC Tech's, Carl Miller, had to oversee his school and OCA for about 2 days. The early college high schools don't have assistant principals. Six of OCA's teachers were out last week. Quote, then we didn't have subs show up for them either. That's what complicates things, is when the subs don't show, Ramage said Friday. Continuing the quote, sometimes they don't fill, and then sometimes a sub will sign up for it and not show, so we're at the mercy of them showing up. We had to get very creative with the schedule, all hands on deck. Teachers were covering classes. We were splitting classes. Thankfully, I've got a wonderful faculty that will step up and help each other, so the 12 that were here were just fantastic in covering and getting each other's back. Because we're small enough, it's kind of like family, so we take care of each other, he added. Miller checked on OCA while Ramage was out. Ramage said things ran normally, and he was able to check email, message teachers, check on how they were doing, and see how the day was progressing. Quote, I helped build the schedule for coverage from home, and then just sent it out to everyone, and we just worked that way, Ramage said. On January 25th, he said, they had all their teachers back for the first time in well over 2 or 3 weeks. Quote, it seemed like everyone just got COVID at the same time, including our students. The bulk of our students are returning this week. All our teachers are back. I was having a tremendous amount of cases well over a week ago, and now we're not having that many cases at all. We just had a surge for really about 2.5 weeks, Ramage said. He added that it was very trying and stressful. Quote, but everyone's got each other's back. You have to in this situation. It's not anyone's fault that they're sick, that they're home, so you just have to step up and help your colleague, Ramage said. On January 4th, Atkins said 7.7% of district employees were out, and they had an employee attendance of 92.3%. On January 14th, the absence rate was 12.5%. Atkins said it was part of the week where they were seeing the numbers rise. On January 21st, the absence percentage was 9.3%. But on January 24th, they had a 4.8% absence rate. Quote, it was back in single digits all of last week, Atkins said. It's possible that the shorter quarantine period was a factor. It makes a quicker turnaround, so a group comes back and a group gets sick and goes off, Atkins said. On many days, there have been campuses that have had to be very flexible and creative, but it may not be reflected in reports because of the timing and reporting, he added. Some people may fill out the report online right away, and others may wait until they feel better. Quote, "The absence rate is a little bit of a lagging statistic. We've had every department and every campus hit by a bubble, but it's just like in the community, it's been everywhere. People across the district have gotten sick with the virus," Atkins said.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Odessa American for Monday. Suspicious package. At about 2:57 p.m. Sunday, the Midland Police Department bomb squad was dispatched in reference to a suspicious package at the Midland International Airport. The terminal was evacuated for safety. After examining the package and conducting a sweep of the airport, authorities cleared the scene and determined there was not a threat. Airport operations have returned to normal.
COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 35,715 total cases, 604 deaths. Midland County, 34,976 total cases, 440 deaths. Texas, 6,201,110 total cases, 79,267 deaths. U.S. cases, 74,037,216 total confirmed cases, and 879,971 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, the test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with DOCS Health, have scheduled drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 access road, 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Property taxes due. The Ector County Appraisal District has sent out property tax statements, and payments are due today. Those who own real estate and the mortgage company does not pay the taxes, those who owned a business January 1, 2021, with assets that include inventory, furniture, fixtures, equipment, machinery, and/or vehicles, and those who own a working or royalty interest in mineral property should have already received their statements. If not postmarked by January 31, 2022, the taxes will be considered delinquent and will accrue penalty and interest. Those who have not received a statement can call the appraisal district at 432-332-6834 or visit the office at 1301 East 8th Street. Building bots. Petroleum Museum at 1500 West Interstate 20 in Midland has scheduled a building bots for kids grades K through 2 from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Tuesday. Pre-registration is required. For more information, call 432-683-4403 or visit petroleummuseum.org. Permian Basin gubernatorial an Attorney General forum. Permian Basin Republicans have scheduled a Permian Basin Gubernatorial and Attorney General forum at 6 p.m. on Tuesday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center at 1310 Farm Road 1788 in Midland. Doors open at 5 p.m. This event will give Republicans all around West Texas the opportunity to hear from four of the gubernatorial candidates and three of the attorney general candidates. Participating candidates are Chad Prather, Alan West, Don Huffines, Candy K. Horn, Eva Guzman, George P. Bush, and Louis Gohmert. Tickets are $7 to $20. For tickets or more information, visit WagnerNoel.com. Town Halls. Ector County Judge candidate Dustin Fawcett has scheduled at 6 p.m. at the following dates and locations. Tuesday, Callis Turner Community Center at 2230 Sycamore Drive. Thursday, Gardendale Community Center, 4226 East Larkspur Lane in Gardendale. February 8th, South Ector Community Center at 4455 West Apple Street. For more information, email dustin@dustinfawcett.com or visit tinyurl.com/BDEHYRRF. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center at 1310 North FM 1788 Midland will present Trey Kennedy, the Are You For Real tour at 7 p.m. Wednesday. Doors open at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, visit WagnerNoel.com. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce will honor Medical Center Health System and Odessa Regional Medical Center professionals at the 2021 Outstanding Citizens of the Year Luncheon from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center at 305 East 5th Street. To register or for more information, visit bit.ly/3Q0VZGZ or call Lynn Van Amberg at 432-333-7862 or email LynnVA@odessachamber.com. Ellen Noel Art Museum at 4909 East University Boulevard has scheduled a film series event from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday. The PBS series, The Black Church, will be played in four segments to celebrate Black History Month. This event happens every Thursday of February. Thursday, Episode 1, The Freedom Faith. February 10th, Episode 2, A Nation Within a Nation. February 17th, Episode 3, God Will Make a Way. February 24th, Episode 4, Crisis of Faith. For more information about this event, call 432-550-9696.
Frequent guest acts more like a roommate. Dear Abby, a friend recently moved back to his home state. Because he was anxious about leaving, I told him he could stay with me anytime he wanted. I was trying to be nice and calm his nerves, but he has taken me literally and thinks he can come stay whenever he likes. When he visits, we rarely spend time together outside of my house. He's off with other friends for dining, boating, etc. By the way, I know these people, but I'm never invited, which is okay, I suppose, but shouldn't I be? In addition, he leaves piles of clothes lying around in my living area, along with other tissues and face masks, which seem disrespectful. Am I wrong to be annoyed? Other friends think I'm being taken advantage of. I would appreciate your thoughts. Signed, Too Nice a Guy in Georgia. Dear Too Nice, Do not blame your friends for taking advantage of the generous offer you made before he moved, and no rule of etiquette dictates that you should be included in his outings with others if he's an invited guest. It would have been thoughtful had he suggested it, however. I do think you are overdue in having a talk with him about the clothes, used face masks, and tissues lying around. The bottom line is, do you feel you are being taken advantage of? If the answer is yes, speak up and express that. While you don't mind him staying with you occasionally, he should not assume your house is his pad in town. Dear Abby, I have a wonderful 31-year-old son who is in a relationship with a lovely young woman. It's likely they will be married in a year or two. They work hard in their careers and enjoy good food and wine, and I'm happy for them both. I've noticed, however, that over the last year, my son has steadily put on weight and is having some trouble with his complexion. I'm concerned that he has acquired the habit of overindulging himself and that over time he will continue gaining weight and drinking too much. His girlfriend looks great. She manages her weight very well. I know my observations will be unwelcome, so I don't share them with him. I think it's the right choice, but it's really hard to hold back. We do discuss health in general, as it's a mutual interest, but that's as far as it goes. His father passed away a few years ago, so sadly, he's not around to share my concerns. What should I do? Signed, Treading Lightly in New Hampshire. Dear Treading Lightly, you are a caring parent. But your son is well into adulthood, and I don't think involving yourself in his weight problem would be well received. Many people of both sexes have put on weight over the last 2 years as a result of the pandemic. Because of that, you could encourage him to get a physical. If you do, his doctor might talk to him about his weight gain.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.